Welcome to the Plant Spirit Podcast on connecting with plant consciousness and the healing wisdom of nature. If you'd like to learn more on how to communicate directly with plants, visit www.learnplantlanguage.com to register for the free workshop. That's www.learnplantlanguage.com. I'm your host, Sarah Artemisia, and I'm excited and deeply honored to introduce our next guest to the show today. Lindsay Fauntleroy is a licensed acupuncturist and the author of In Our Element, Soul Medicine to Unleash Your Personal Power. She's also the founder of The Spirit Seed, a school that offers personal and professional development courses that are rooted in ancestral understandings of health, humanity, nature, and the cosmos. Lindsay's five-element flower essence remedies, the Elementals, are available nationally and internationally, and she's a facilitator of the Flower Essence Society's Global Practitioner Certification Program. Her approach to soul medicine has emerged over 15 years of clinical practice. Doctoral studies of Indigenous and African diasporic psychology, and her commitment to community wellness. So, Lindsay, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I am beyond excited.
Oh, I'm so delighted that you joined us today. Absolutely love the way that you work with the plants and your deep connection with them and the elements. And just there's this sense of an ancient knowing that you really bring forward in your work in a way that is so accessible, grounded, and really fun as well. And so I'd love to start with, you know, you were sharing earlier about how you have been in this journey with the Indigenous and African diasporic psychology, how that really weaves in with your work with the plants, with healing. And I'm curious, what can we learn from African and Indigenous healing systems?
Oh, there's so much. And what I find with African spiritual systems and African Indigenous culture is that it is interwoven in our lives in so many ways that are not necessarily named or acknowledged, but still really present. And so one of the first things that I'll say we can learn is about this connection to nature and about this understanding that the natural world is in conversation with us and that we are in conversation with it, and to really lean into the wisdom that comes from nature. I think as we were talking about before, there is no culture within humanity that if you go back far enough, healing is in the body, healing is in the spirit, and healing is in nature, and how those are interwoven shows up differently across different cultures, but it's still the foundation that there is no healing without nature. And so we really see those connections and how those worldviews appreciated the forces of nature as working entities in our lives, as sources of communication, of sources of wisdom, of sources of intelligence. And then we've seen that kind of translated through time. If we look at this phrase called the anima mundi, which means like the soul of the world, right? And it's referring to this life force, this shared breath with nature. And so we see that in modern language, but that's a very ancient concept. This idea of being in shared relationship with the natural world is one of the things that we can learn from African diasporic spirituality, as well as even my work. I use the five elements as a model, as archetypal forces. So fire is not just physical fire, but it's the energy of fire. It's the embrace. It's the dance of fire. It's the movement of fire. It's the season of fire. And we see that same alignment in African systems where the forces of nature are later personified and become this source of wisdom, and learning how to be connected with that and to stay present to those signatures. I talk about in the book a lot of signatures. What does it mean when fire is in the room? And from an African diasporic perspective, we would say, well, what does it look like when Shango is in the room or Oya is in the room? And so that sensibility of recognizing that we are not separate from nature, but intrinsically interconnected, I think has been one of the gifts for me in my personal spiritual practice.
Amazing. Yeah. And is there anything coming to mind in particular, maybe some tips or just simple practices that people can do to really connect with these archetypal forces, this understanding and recognition that we are really all a part of nature? I feel like so much of what I have read in your book, it offers these really direct ways that we can connect with these elements.
I think the word that comes up for me so much that we've been talking about in the past is listening and noticing. And so this idea of synchronicity, this idea that things in the outer world are connecting to things in the inner world at the same time, or, you know, that alchemical tenet, as above, so below, as without, so within, as the universe, so the soul. Well, what do we really mean when we say that? We mean that what's happening outside in our environment is reflective of something that's going on within us. And so that listening of, okay, there's a storm outside right now. What does that mean? Or it's summer right now. How does that brightness of the summer and that extra version of the summer reflect what's going on inside of me? Or there's something happening politically in the collective. How does that reflect something that is emergent inside of me? So this idea of being interconnected in that, in those ways, is one of the ways that we can start tuning into nature. And I love to start with the seasons, because there's a season for everything. So there's a season to go inside and to be nurtured. There's a season to initiate and have drive and to be ambitious. And then there's a season to be in solitude. And so looking at those seasons in nature and then seeing how they show up in our lives is one of the first ways to tune in.
Yeah, I love that. And just that dynamic interplay between what's the internal, the external, the macrocosm, the microcosm, how there's this experience of like being a fractal in every moment kind of a thing, recognizing that we can microscope way into something, we can macroscope way out, and that basically we're seeing the same patterns reflected on every scale, every level. And kind of similarly to that, it seems to me that we're in a really interesting time planetarily where there is such a invitation to connect with these ancient ways of being, these ancient ways of connecting with nature. And also we're existing in this very modern time where things are happening that have never happened before planetarily. That's right. So, yeah, I'm curious, in your experience, this term neo-ancient, could you tell us a bit more about that and why do you use that term?
I love that you are bringing this in, because the way that I talk about it in the book is that we are at this, I would say, unprecedented time in history because of the technology that we have access to now, where we can be connected to each other in seconds. We can be on different sides of the world and still be in the same communication in real time, which is new for humanity in that sense, at least on this planet, I'll say that. And then we also have a growing receptivity to the wisdom of other cultures. And that has not historically always been true. We come from a long lineage of erasing culture. We come from a long lineage of destroying the artifacts of cultural wisdom. And so this curiosity about what other cultures do and how other cultures have done things in the past is relatively new for our current cultural context. And so when I speak of being neo-ancient, there's two draws there. One is this like immense curiosity for what our ancestors did and how they survived. And then there's this fascination with the new technology and the new ways of being. And the way that I talk about it in the book is that we can really enjoy the benefits of both and use one to support the other. So we don't have to romanticize the past and say, okay, you know, the world is a little out of control right now. I wish I could go back to the way things were. Well, not really, because what would that mean? That would mean that I talk about in the book, I'd be riding this on the back of a tortoise shell, or I'd be walking 200 miles to my family's house. That's not really how I personally want to live. But at the same time, we can use the wisdom to support where we're going as a collective. And so how do we use the best of what the world has to offer us now, the technology, the resources, the community, the collaboration, the communication, and how do we use what we have available to us to transmit the wisdom of the ancient world that has been lost? How do we do that in a way that has integrity and is both honoring what came before and also bringing it forward? So it's the West African principle of Sankofa. How do we look behind us to fly forward? And understanding also, too, one thing that I reflect on a lot is that even though we're in unprecedented times, that nature has been here through all of it. And so if we do believe that life happens in cycles, which I do believe that our lives unfold in cycles and that humanity goes through cycles, you know, every 100 years, we're looking at some of the same wounds and some of the same traumas, even though they're manifesting differently, it's some of the same wounds. And so that's where nature has gifts for us, because nature can say, oh, I remember when humanity faced this crisis 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. And so there's that wisdom and support that can usher us through things that we haven't seen before, but our souls recognize as the trials of humanity.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. It's that aspect of the soul recognition, that there's an aspect of that happening that sometimes we might not even cognitively understand why there's this resonance or this thing really calling to us that we feel this strange pull towards or deeply connected with, and that there's a reason for that. And that if we follow the threads of really listening, we can unravel into this whole magical, beautiful experience of healing that we didn't even know was available, but that by listening, we really access that. And that aspect also of what you were just sharing about how nature has so many gifts for us, that nature has been here for eons longer than we have, and so has really seen it all. And that one of the potent gifts that I really feel, and I know you do as well in your work, is so available right now, is the flower medicine. And so Could you tell us a bit about your experience with how flower medicine and particularly flower essences are supportive to healing and really supportive to living a joyful, fully embodied, alive life right now?
Yeah, I think of flowers, or I was taught that flowers are the expression of the highest intention of a plant. In East Asian medicine and Chinese medicine, we would say it's the Shen, or the spirit intelligence of the plant. And I think about these examples in the human experience where we walk into a situation, we read this situation and we interpret it through our own lens, our own wounds, our own traumas, our own perspectives, and then we respond accordingly. And so what the flower essences offer is that moment of walking into a situation, beginning to move into our own interpretation. And then instead of responding from our wounds, there's this higher intelligence that says, look at it this way. And then we have the opportunity to make new choices because we have new information. We have new intelligence guiding our movements. And so that's the possibility and the magic of the flower essences, is that they offer new perspectives and higher truths, really a higher intelligence, to support us through the heartache and the soul wounds, or I call them soul hiccups, right? Anxiety, depression, uncertainty. What if we could replace those feelings of uncertainty? What if we could replace those feelings of self-doubt or disconnection with a higher truth? And that's where the flower essences really can support us, because they offer that.
Love that. Yeah, they absolutely do offer that perspective shift, that wider understanding of what's happening in this broader perspective, this new information that they bring forward. Thanks for sharing that. And as a facilitator in FES, I'd love to hear a bit about, in your experience, your perspective, really, what is the difference between working with flower essences and then flower essence therapy?
Oh, so I am of the persuasion that all of us can work with flower essences. Right. So I think about, if we use an analogy of biomedicine, many of us will have ibuprofen or rubbing alcohol or some first aid stuff that we can turn to when we need support. If we're coming from an herbal place, we might have certain tinctures that we know we can use for colds, for flus, for aches and pains and bruises, right? So we have our medicine toolkit. And that's how I see working with flower essences, that we can all have these remedies in our cabinet that we turn to when we're experiencing ourselves overthinking or experiencing self-doubt and uncertainty, or feeling those moods of sadness or hopelessness, all of these things that have been pretty common over the last few years. So that's working with flower essences. I really do believe that we should all have just our kit of flower essences that we're using for soul first aid. That's actually how I was introduced to them. The person that my sister-in-law, when she gave me the flower essence, it wasn't because she was a flower essence practitioner. It was just, she was a mom and she was raising daughters and she had a collection of flower essences because life is tricky sometimes and we need support. So flower essence therapy is the work of supporting someone through archetypal emergence and awakening. And so that is a deeper level of the work that is sustained over time as we become new beings and as we integrate more of ourselves. So the example that I could use, giving the five element model as one archetypal system, and of course we can use any archetypal system, whether it's the tarot or astrology or Orisha, we can use any archetypal system. But this idea of, if I approach my life in a very fire elementy way, and then I'm moved into a situation where I need to learn how to cultivate the earth element within my psyche, the flower essences and flower essence therapy is going to support me through that transition of shedding one way of being that's kind of ingrained and practiced and programmed and a default, and welcoming and awakening another way of being in the world. Because the reality is that we are all of the elements. We are all of the signs of the zodiac. We are all the constellations, but we tend to default to one mode of being or another. And as life would have it, those modes of being can't sustain every experience. And so we, whether through choice or through divine intervention, we find ourselves in these life situations that call for us to be something else, to become something else, to become more of ourselves. And that's what flower essence therapy is meant to support. How do I go from being one type of person to another type of person, but still be authentically me?
Amazing. Wow. So many gems in what you just shared there, how the essences really support us to become more of ourselves. So right. That is really so much of what this journey of being human is about, and how they support this archetypal emergence and awakening. I just love that you shared that. And as you were sharing about that, I was getting this sense how, you know, on this individual level, so many of us are doing that, experiencing our own archetypal emergence and awakening within the self, and that we're also doing that planetarily on a much larger collective scale right now. Oh my goodness, it makes complete sense from that framework of what you just shared, that the flower essences are such a supportive medicine for right now, for right now. Yeah.
I think it's, if we're thinking archetypally, as you bring up this example, what it just made me think of is that we're shifting in our healing model from being the scientist back to being the magician. And there's something very powerful in what kinds of medicines become available to us when we move beyond just what our five senses can work with. So that's my hope and prayer too, that as we're doing these social shifts, these political shifts, all kinds of shifts in the collective, that this part of us that remembers our connection to the natural world and the support of the natural world is also reemerging and reawakening within us.
Oh, I love that. And how do you feel like the plants, does anything come to mind for you about how they really support us with reconnecting to that inner magician aspect of ourselves?
In terms of specific flowers or just the flowers in general?
Well, actually, if specific flowers are coming to mind, I'd love to hear about that.
Okay, so I would say that when I think about the flowers and that call to the magician side of us, it's the part of us that can trust the invisible. You know, it's that part of us that can see beyond the physical form. that's the work of the magician. When I look at, I have a bunch of sunflower paintings and sunflowers around me right now. So as I look at the sunflower that's in front of me, can I see beyond the beautiful yellow petals to some essence of what it means to move through the world like a sunflower? And that's the magician that can see beyond the form and move the energies and the essence. And so both to be drawn to plant medicine and also to notice what's happening with plant medicine. It's not a medicine that's going to knock you over the head. It's a very subtle movement from the inside. And so that magician has their eye turned to the invisible, to the subtle, to the unbelievable. And I've had that experience of flower essences where, just being completely transparent, I often turn to flower essences, even though I have tons of them in my home and I work with them all the time. In my own practice, I usually remember to go to flower essences when I'm already at the bottom. It's counterintuitive. It doesn't make sense, but it's true. I get all the way to the bottom of whatever I'm going through and I'm like, oh yeah, there's flower essences for this stuff the whole time. So I go to the flower essences and I make the flower essences, and then the transformation happens. And then there's a part of me that can't believe how different I feel. There's a part of me that feels like it's almost magical that this thing that was so big and so hard a moment ago, all of a sudden feels hopeful, possible, like it's moving, like it's shifting. So that's the magic of the magician, that things can move in ways that we can't necessarily predict, but are wondrous, that wondrous spirit, and coming back to that.
Oh, I love that. And just what you were saying too, about how they really work on these root, they work at that root level, these root patterns, that they're so good and so supportive for that. And I just love that you brought up that aspect of this invitation, you know, looking at the sunflowers, how to move through the world as a sunflower, that how interesting would it be is for us to approach plants and just pose this question of, you know, how would it be to move through the world as a rose, as a cedar tree, like just really tuning in that aspect of deep listening. Again, just coming back to that we were sharing earlier, it's just so, so important. So important when working with nature, with plant medicine. And I'd love to hear a bit about, if you're open to sharing, how you train wellness practitioners to really integrate flower essences into their work.
It's so funny you say that, because that last piece that you were just mentioning, how do I live as a sunflower or a cedar tree? That's a big part of the training. So the training is not just what does each flower do and what is it indicated for? I mean, that's part of it. But if we're trying to practice this medicine in a way that is not extractive, if we're trying to practice this medicine in a way that is not, this is what these flowers do for me, and that's it, thank you and goodbye, it's really about coming into relationship. And so there's many parts of that training. One of the first things that I love to train practitioners is to think about, how do we access nature through different layers and states of consciousness? So this is a meditation that I've been doing recently, is thinking about, how does nature perceive me? And as I'm walking alongside the river, what do the trees perceive of me? They're not paying attention to my words. They're paying attention to my gestures, my movement, how heavy or light my feet are on the sidewalk, how fast my heart is beating, you know, how much light is in my eyes. That's what I imagine nature checking me out and seeing, okay, what kind of human is this? Or here she comes again. What kind of human is she today? That sort of presence. And so that's part of the training, is how do I come into that kind of presence in nature? How do I listen through the ears of the heart, perceive through the eyes of the heart? How do I drop out of my beta consciousness and into alpha and theta and delta to welcome another type of knowing? So that's part of the training. And then also it's looking at indigenous worldviews. Coming back to this idea that the original medicines were out of indigenous cultures that involved nature, and that we can't just bring a Western or Eurocentric mind to studying this medicine, that we actually have to shift our mind to think more communally, more collectively instead of individually, more aligned to the rules of dynamism and change more so than materialism. So how do we start to decolonize or chip away at some of the thinking that we bring to this medicine so that we can really work with it through the eyes of our ancestors? Of course, in a neo-ancient way, because some of the soul hiccups that we're facing right now, our ancestors did not have to bother with. So it's, how do I use their lens, their eyes, and bring it to the reality that I have now? How do I monitor the cyclical stages of healing? That's part of the training as well. And then that kind of all comes together as we reflect on what is my work? What is my sacred work to do? Because becoming a flower essence practitioner looks different for each of us. You know, some of us are working privately. Some of us are working in organizations. Some of us are working in our families because we have some intergenerational stuff that we're healing or clearing up. So it's really, how do I deepen into my sacred work and bring these plants with me as supporters and allies in this transformation?
So powerful. Everything you just shared there. I mean, that aspect of it's not extractive. It's about coming into relationship, about thinking more collectively, really tuning into, you know, how to monitor the cyclical stages of healing. And this big, big question, this huge invitation of how does nature perceive me and how do I come into presence with nature? That if we really approach the healing work and approach the experience of being alive from this perspective, what opens up? Really, what opens up for us?
That's right. So much. Yeah.
Well, clearly your work is so powerful. And so, Lindsay, tell us, how can people find out more about you and your work?
Thespiritseed.org. That's where you can find out information about classes. We have open level classes. We have practitioner classes. That's kind of the hub of our community. And then also in the social media world, you can find me at Lindsay Font. So Lindsay with an A, Fauntleroy with an F.
Wonderful. And also, I just have to ask, how would you say that the plants really support you in your life's work?
I can share a funny story. because I think this is so true for my work right now, because I'm doing a lot of writing and a lot of teaching. And so I remember when I first went to do my training at the Flower Essence Society, and I was very excited because I had been working with this flower called Scarlet Monkey Flower, which deals with dealing with some suppressed emotion. And I had such a cathartic experience with that flower. And I went to tell Richard Katz, one of the co-founders of the Flower Essence Society. And I started to tell him about my experience. And he said, no, don't tell me, go tell the flowers. So he brought me to the Scarlet Monkey Flower. He was like, tell them your story. And so when I was writing the book and when I'm teaching classes and I'm trying to figure out what to say, I always pull out the pictures of the flowers. And I'm asking them, what story do you want me to tell? How do you want to show up in the world? You do so many amazing things. What do you want me to share of your wisdom? And so I think that is one of the ways that they are supporting me, is just being in that continuous conversation about not so much what do I want to say, but what do they want us to know? And trying to really stay present to that.
Amazing. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a joy, delight, and honor to have you. And thank you for all that you do in collaboration with the plants and the flowers. It clearly just runs so deep. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for the space you've created for us to all connect to each other and to the plants.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. So thank you. And thanks so much for listening and joining us today on the Plant Spirit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and please follow to subscribe, leave a review, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.